Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about asbestos, lawsuits against the Boy Scouts of America, and the Keystone XL oil pipeline. It's Thursday, October 31st. Happy Halloween. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. <laughs> 2019 was a weird year for agricultural production in Montana. That's according to one of the presenters at the upcoming Agricultural Economics Outlook Conference in Bozeman this Friday. Rachel Kramer reports.
Kate Fuller opened some charts on her office computer. They show the overall acres planted with the state's big commodity crops in 2019.
In terms of acreage, we're a bit up in wheat. Barley is, as it has been for a long time, really pretty flat. We saw a decline in lentil acres.
Fuller, an extension specialist and an assistant professor in agricultural economics and economics at Montana State University, says Montana's overall agricultural production this year was about the same as 2018. But there were a lot of challenges.
2019 has definitely been a weird year.
She says part of that weirdness is because a cold, wet spring and fall made it harder for farmers to get into their fields to plant and harvest. Another reason?
We've been in this extended trade situation, and I think people are starting to get more concerned about that.
Fuller says grain prices have been low for the last several years. Trade wars and higher tariffs have made it harder for farmers to find profitable markets outside the U.S. The U.S. typically exports about half of its grain. For Montana, it's more around 75%. Fuller says another reason why grain prices have been in a slump is because other countries are getting better at growing more high-quality grain. That means there's more competition on the global market.
Given the sort of circumstance that we're in right now, where prices for pretty much everything we produce are on the decline, producers are really looking for something else to offset some of that. And so we've had growers pretty interested in growing hemp.
Montana is the number one state in terms of acres planted with hemp. But right now, it doesn't have any big processors. And many Montana farmers are alleging shady contracts with buyers that didn't pay them what they were owed.
It certainly has not been a risk-free situation.
Fuller says a number of policies in the Farm Bill are in place to support farmers when commodity crop prices or yields are low that could help keep production levels stable in 2020. But there's a lot of uncertainty. Fuller will be presenting at MSU's Agricultural Economics Outlook Conference on Friday. More information is available at ypradio.org. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Most roads in Yellowstone National Park are about to close to cars and trucks for the year. The National Park Service plans to close all roads Monday except the route to the north entrance at Gardner, Montana, to the northeast entrance at Cook City, Montana. The roads remain plowed year-round. Roads will reopen to snowmobiles and snow coaches starting December 15th, weather permitting. Park officials already have closed the road over Dunraven Pass for the season. The road closed earlier than planned this year because of snow. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency took another step this week toward transferring oversight of the Libby Asbestos Superfund site to the state by releasing the first two plans outlining how the state will mitigate the spread of any remaining contamination in Libby and Troy. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton explains.
Since 1999, the EPA has removed asbestos and vermiculite from over 2,600 private and industrial properties in Libby and Troy. The agency says the cleanup in those two Superfund units is done, and now it plans to hand oversight of the two cities to the state for ongoing mitigation efforts. The EPA released its Institutional Control Implementation and Assurance Plan for public comment Monday. It's one of two plans the agency will release before it hands off control to the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. EPA's Mike Sirian.
Now, in the case of Libby here, they're reaching out and working with Lincoln County and the Lincoln County Asbestos Resource Program to help them work on this.
It all comes down to preventing the spread of any known or unknown contamination left behind inside of buildings or the surrounding environment. This plan essentially outlines the responsibilities of DEQ and the Lincoln County Asbestos Resource Program, ARP, when it comes to working with property owners who are remodeling their home or constructing a new building.
Somebody calls you, Dig. ARP, they will get that call as well. And they're part of the response that goes out and looks at where they're digging. And they will talk with either the builder or the homeowner who called you, Dig, and find out what they're doing and go, oh, we can help you here, or oh, you're good to go.
The institutional control plan also outlines requirements for the reporting and disposal of contaminants. Comments on the plan are due December 31st. Once DEQ gains oversight of the Libby and Troy units in April, it will control 5 of the 8 units that make up the Libby Superfund site. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
A former Helena police officer is charged with using $6,800 in funds from the Helena Police Protective Association to make personal purchases. Court records say Tyler Wood is scheduled to plead guilty and be sentenced on November 14th. The hearing has been postponed twice. Wood declined to comment when reached by the Associated Press on Wednesday. Interim Police Chief Steve Hagan tells the Independent Record that Wood was placed on paid administrative leave on August 12th, and his employment ended on September 6th. He had been a school resource officer. An investigation determined the thefts occurred between February 1st and August while Wood served as the association's treasurer. The association's vice president, Andrew Barton, told investigators that Wood apologized and said, quote, I'm unhappy with the choices I've made, unquote. Two Montana men yesterday filed lawsuits against the Boy Scouts of America and its Montana affiliate over alleged sexual abuse by scout leaders. Nikki Ouellette reports.
In separate court filings, the men, identified only by their initials to protect their privacy, say scout leaders from Troop 190 in Great Falls and Troop 26 in Hamilton sexually molested them from 1980 to 85 and 1968 to 71, respectively. Court documents describe the abuse on multiple occasions, in cars, on the way to and from scouting events, at the scout leaders' homes, and on camping and hiking trips. They say Boy Scouts of America and the Montana Council didn't undertake reasonable effort to investigate two scout leaders, George DeBlois and Claire Conway, or their suitability to supervise children. The filings also allege the organizations did not adequately train or supervise the scout leaders. One man, identified as M.M., says he told another scout leader at the time about the alleged abuse, but no action was taken. Gillian Dumas, a Portland-based attorney representing both MM and MB, says Boy Scouts of America knew men joined the organization to abuse children but didn't warn parents or children. She says her clients want for BSA and the Montana Council to
not just apologize that something may have happened while they were in scouting, but that these defendants actually were accountable for that, that they actually did something wrong. That would be a good first step.
Dumas says she's aware of 4 so-called ineligible volunteer files BSA created that document other accusations of sexual abuse at the hands of scout leaders in Montana, adding more victims may come forward. Recent changes to Montana's statute of limitations allow adult survivors of child sexual abuse to file claims through May 2020 of cases previously timed out. Both plaintiffs in the suits filed Wednesday are seeking general and special damages, punitive damages, and costs on 4 counts, including negligence, fraud, and malice. A statement from Boy Scouts of America reads in part, quote, "We sincerely apologize to anyone who was harmed during their time in scouting. The safety and protection of children is our most important priority," end quote. The statement notes the organization has put in safeguards like mandatory youth protection training and background checks while banning one-on-one interactions. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
The public had its first and only chance to meet with State Department officials about a new environmental analysis of the Keystone XL pipeline Tuesday. As Olivia Reingold reports, attendees traveled hundreds of miles to Billings to submit their comments on the controversial oil pipeline.
No way!
On a brisk Montana night, Patricia Ironcloud was one of about 60 who turned out for a Northern Plains Resource Council protest against the pipeline ahead of a public meeting.
I think it's at least 19 degrees right now. Who does that?
She's a tribal council member for the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes and says she drove over 6 hours in the snow to deliver this message.
The government needs to speak with us as people. You know, we have our children, our grandchildren. I have 46 grandchildren.
Later, Ironcloud went inside to declare her opposition to the pipeline at a comment station with a stenographer.
Whenever you're ready.
I'm Patricia Ironcloud. I'm an executive council member for the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux Tribe.
She's one of about 150 people who showed up to submit comments on a revised environmental impact statement for the pipeline. The event was put on by the State Department. They're involved because the pipeline would cross an international border. If built, the controversial project would carry tar sands oil from Canada to Nebraska. The Obama administration killed the pipeline, but President Trump revived it by presidential permit. The State Department event wasn't a hearing, more like an open house with poster boards, maps of the pipeline's proposed path, and occasional arguments between people who came to offer comment.
If you don't sign the contract, your land will be taken through eminent domain. How is that a fair process?
Keystone has treated me more than fair.
That's alfalfa farmer Todd Tibbetts, who owns a one-mile stretch of land in Prairie County, Montana, that the pipeline would cross. After things cool down, he tells me the pipeline's owner, TC Energy, would give him a stipend worth 2% of his annual income.
But the big winners, I think, locally is going to be the county for schools, roads, hospitals.
That's because the pipeline could more than double property tax receipts in some counties, according to a recent court filing by the Montana Attorney General's office.
Deaths every year by 6 deaths.
Todd Devlin is a county commissioner for Prairie County, a horizontal slice of northeast Montana. He says his tax base is limited because his county has about 1,100 residents and is 43% federal land. So to him, supporting the pipeline is a no-brainer.
You really have to look at it and say, is this going to be a detriment to my environment? No. Is it going to be a detriment to the safety? No. Is it going to increase my tax base? Yeah.
The environmental draft marks possible repercussions on a scale from beneficial, impacts that would improve resources, to significant, impacts that would have adverse effects. 6 areas got a minor or moderate rating. That's soil, air quality, water resources, biological resources, and cultural resources. A 7th category, greenhouse gases and climate change, breaks that format. Instead of a rating, it says there would be direct and indirect emissions from the project.
So now you won't look at me? I gave you the respect to look at you, but you won't look at me?
Jane Klebe, who came all the way from Nebraska, asked Prairie County Commissioner Devlin across the room if he really thought the environmental risks were worth the money.
When in America was it okay for a foreign oil pipeline, a pipeline that's going to carry foreign tar sands through our land, through tribal land, threatening our water, down to the export terminal for a refinery that is owned by Saudi Arabia? How is that in the America's interest?
In his newsboy cap and blue jeans, Devlin stands up. He says he and other Montana county commissioners helped negotiate deals between landowners and TC Energy. The pipeline got his support once his landowners called him and said,
Mr. Devlin, they have treated us more than fair. And that was a quote, more than fair. And that we said we were satisfied with that. We wanted to make sure our landowners were satisfied with it. And when they were, we left it be and supported it.
This dialogue is what James Dewey, a spokesperson for the State Department, says was the point of Tuesday's event.
Gathering those comments is really important, and we think it's really important that people write those comments down so they can be part of the record. And we offered them different ways to do that tonight.
How many comments are part of that record? He checks his phone to see.
And when you scroll down here, so currently we have 67 comments received. I know there's a lot more people out there that have comments to give.
On Instagram alone, there are more than 5,000 posts with the hashtag KeystoneXL. So why aren't there more than 67 comments on the draft? Dewey says it's not his job to answer that question, only to encourage more comments. The comment period for the State Department's environmental draft ends November 18th, but the pipeline continues to be challenged by 3 lawsuits, all being heard by the same federal judge in Great Falls. Earlier this month, TC Energy informed the court it intends to spray weeds, haul pipe, and knock out other pre-construction activities ahead of the pipeline's tentative construction date next year. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.